Hey everybody, it's Mike from the Mike Wagner Show, powered by Sonic Web Studios and brought to you by official sponsor of the Mike Wagner Show, international warring author Mia Molson's The Missing, available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. We're here with a terrific lady who's a Southern California native, began her career meeting her guitar teacher, Randy Rhodes, with A Quiet Riot and Ozzy Osbourne, and later became the lead guitarist for Precious Metal and selected by Lindsey Buckingham, Fleetwood Mac, to be Out of the Cradle in 92. Also debuted her solo release, Open the Door, and also opened for Heart, Colin Hay, Loudon Wainwright III, and also the Smithereens, and began collaboration with John Carter Cash in Take Me As I Am and the latest Folsom Prison Blues. And is it something like what Johnny Cash did? I guess we're going to find out and more, and you'll be surprised what happened in Folsom Prison Blues. Live, ladies and gentlemen, and plus duties in beautiful downtown L.A., the amazing Southern California native, songwriter, guitarist, part of the String Revolution with the Folsom Prison Blues. We'll play at the end of the audio interview. Ladies and gentlemen, the multi-talented Janet Robin. Janet, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello. Hello, everybody. This will be on camera too, right?
Yes, that's right. Video and audio. It's amazing how technology has advanced, just like with Folsom Prison Blues. You know, once a Johnny Cash song, now you take it to a whole new level with John Carter Cash, but also did something else special. But before we talk about that, you've lived in Southern California for quite some time, beginning a career, meeting your guitar teacher, Randy Rhodes from Quiet Riot and Ozzy Osbourne. You later became lead guitarist for Precious Metal, and you're selected by Lindsey Buckingham of Fleetwood Mac to be in Out of the Cradle back in 92. You also debuted your solo release, Open the Door. You opened for Heart, Colin Hay, and more. And you also began a collaboration with John Carter Cash. And before getting to Folsom Prison Blues and more, tell us how you first got started, Janet.
How the Folsom Prison Blues?
No. Just you in general. How'd you get started? So go all the way back, back.
Yeah, we're going back.
Johnny Cash is a small child if you have to.
We're going back 300 years now.
There you go. Johnny Cash may be 301, so you might somewhat beat him to it. So.
Yeah, no, I am a native, born and raised here in Los Angeles. I have two older brothers, and when I was just a little youngster, I was experimenting, trying different things like sports and, you know, dance lesson, whatever, all those things. And my mom also started taking guitar lessons. Mm. And I was like, oh, I want to try that, you know, and everything else had failed. Like, I didn't like anything, like karate, nothing. It just wasn't like sitting well with me. So I started on just like folk and classical, and I loved it. I had tried other instruments in school, for example, like clarinet and stuff, but it didn't really do anything for me. Mm-hmm. So the guitar just, it just felt like a part of my body, you know, already. I just really liked it. And so I studied with a local teacher in LA area for, let's see, I started around 6 or 7, and about when I turned 9, my brother wanted to move on to electric guitar. And I don't remember, my mom doesn't remember, but somebody referred us to Randy Rhodes, who wasn't Randy Rhodes at the time. I mean, he was, but, you know.
This is before he made it big with Quiet Riot Ozzy Osbourne.
Exactly. He was a local musician, teaching out of his mom's music school, which was around the corner from my parents' house. Okay. And my mom really liked that. And he was in a local LA band, Quiet Riot. That was also before Quiet Riot got big after Randy passed away. So, so anyway, my brother started taking, you know, from him, and I soon followed, you know, begging for an electric. I think I had to borrow my brother's electric guitar for a while until I begged and begged to get my own for birthday or something. And you know, he was just a phenom, you know, just a virtuoso. I mean, we knew something was really special about him just from like the first lesson, to see him play, even in the lesson, you know. Mm-hmm. And I started bringing my friends from like the neighborhood, like, you got to come to my guitar lesson, which, by the way, was a 30-minute lesson. It was about $8.
Really? 30-minute lesson for $8. And how long ago was that?
So 1977 is when I
Oh
started.
my goodness. Wow. That was a fairly decent bargain. 1977, I'm sure could afford that back then. So
Well, my mom was good with it. And yeah, I studied with him from like age 9 or 10 all the way until 15 years old, which is when he got the gig with Ozzy. And one of his other students who was more, further on than me took over. But we were all very happy for him. And in the interim, before he got the gig with Ozzy, my parents were so supportive. They were taking me and my brother to watch him play at rock clubs in LA, where we're not supposed to get in, but we were chaperoned by my parents. So they would, chaperone us to go see our guitar teacher on stage with Quiet Riot. And I just thought it was like the most amazing thing. I wanted to do that. That was when I got the bug. I was like, and I was good at it. I felt like I was good at it. I had tried softball, karate,
And see, and I
dancing.
see the piano, and I see some pillows
Well,
being
yeah,
quilting,
I play a little
furniture.
piano by ear, but somehow, I just got lucky and I was good at the guitar, and I got lucky with having people like Randy encourage and inspire me. And of course, I didn't think it was weird that I was a girl, but I did realize there weren't a lot of women playing, rock and roll. I mean, really, the only few that I knew were, the Wilson sisters from Heart. I loved Bonnie Raitt and Joni Mitchell, but they weren't like the rockin', kind of players. But anyway, I still was looking up to, of course, all the male players like Jimmy Page, Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton. I mean, they were also my idols. And I think the best thing about Randy was really he could care less about me being a girl. He really, he couldn't give a shit about that. And he didn't give a shit about me being so young. And that kind of gave me a lot of self-esteem.
Nice. I thought he just wanted your money. That was it. So
No, I
I'm
really
kidding.
liked it because he wasn't saying things like, "Oh, you can't play on our team because you're a girl," like my brothers were saying, or things like that, where it had separated me because I was a female. He just looked at me as a guitarist, and I really, really liked that. And he was so about just, focus and practice, and always saying things like, "Don't try to copy me. Don't try to sound like me.
Yeah,
Make
I was going to
your
mention
own
that
sound."
because there's too many people out there that want to be like this, want to be like that. They copy. And next thing you know, it's just like, they fall flat on their face. And I think that's really good advice
It
you
was
give right
great,
there. Yeah.
great advice. I mean, of course, I learned techniques and stuff from him and basics. And what a lot of people don't know about Randy Rhoads is that he was quite a good blues guitar player. And I remember some of our early lessons, like him basically being fanatical about his students learning basic blues, Chuck Berry, that shit, because he's right. If you don't know blues guitar, you can't play rock, hard rock, metal, nothing. You can't play shit because it all comes from that, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And I think the one thing that just comes to mind is when it comes to blues and guitars, everyone can say, B.B. King and say Muddy Waters, but Robert Johnson.
Of
What are your
course.
thoughts on that? Robert Johnson, he's like the ultimate blues guitarist,
Well,
probably like, the
he gets
inventor of
a
it,
lot of
practically.
attention, I think, because there was this whole mystery about him and, making a mysterious pact with the devil and all this. I think he was at the height of marketing himself, putting that out before social media. I'm not saying anything about his playing. He was great. He was obviously a pioneer, but there were a lot of other players, unsung heroes, and by the way, lots of women musicians like Memphis Minnie, and later on came like S Sister Rosetta Tharpe and some other people.
Sister Rosetta Tharpe. I think I've seen that. I was going through a Facebook feed and she was playing, what was it?
White SG, right?
That and I think This Little Light of Mine, and I went, oh my gosh, And right. and she was doing all the licks,
of course,
like yeah. Eric Clapton. I'm like, oh my goodness, took gospel
but
to
of
a
course,
whole new
even
level.
Back then, yeah, even back then, the women weren't getting the attention. And Memphis Minnie, by the way, she wrote "When the Levee Breaks,"
Oh, wow.
which obviously was covered by Zeppelin. And you know, they didn't give her credit. I love Zeppelin, I love them, but I think they thought maybe it was public domain. I don't know, but they got sued and they lost, you know.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I think a lot of the guitarists back then, you know, they realized, hey, my work got stolen, never got credit,
right.
and everything else, a lot of it just got ripped up by Robert Johnson. I don't know if somebody from the family tried to claim that. And when I read that, I'm like, oh,
so,
sad.
Some of these more well-known blues guys and gals have estates that are watching out for their stuff. And the reason I know about some of this is because I'm working on a blues project of lesser-known blues guitarists, and I'm playing instrumentation over it. And I had to secure rights and buy masters and licensing. It's very interesting, you know, digging through the Library of Congress old blues tracks that like people like Alan Lomax went on the road and did these field recordings, which was, you know, just fascinating. So the fact is that, you know, rock and roll came out of, well, first of all, blues came out of post-slavery, right?
Post-slavery,
gospel.
Yes, right.
Post-slavery, right after that, gospel blues. Then that sort of mutated into bluegrass with the white folks, and then, you know, country music, and then of course jazz, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, jazz didn't come before blues, like contrary to what people sometimes think. And
yeah,
then
sometimes think of jazz, you know, like with the horns and
and
everything like that. But of course, you know, there's always jazz guitarists as well too, and I happen to like some of the really good ones, like Al Di Meola.
Oh, he's
Joe
great. Yeah,
Pass, and I think there's also
there's a lot
quite
of great
a few
players.
Others. Stanley
Joe Pass, yeah.
Yeah, Stanley Johnson. I think there was I had, like, you know, Earl Klugh, that's another good one. So
there's a lot of great ones, you know. But yeah, I mean, they'll tell you for sure, you know, it's all derived from blues. Yeah.
Right. And also something too, it's just like, you know, I also thought about classic rock when it comes to guitars. Steve Hackett is one of the better ones with the tapping and everything. Eddie Van Halen just took his technique and took it to a whole new level. You look at Steve Hackett, everything's Eddie Van Halen's the best thing he invented, but really it was Steve Hackett who was doing it in the early days. And then
that's true.
And then it was just that
it's
Eddie Van Halen
always
just took a
borrowing.
whole new level.
I mean, look, all art forms borrow, you know, within the art form, because that's how it is. You get inspired or you learn from other people, and that's cool. But you know, back to Randy, you know, he's saying exactly that. He's like, okay, learn all these things that other people brought to the table, and I'll show you what I do. And then it's sort of like making your own smoothie.
Right.
You know, go make your own smoothie. You know, you experiment with all of these different things and genres of music and different licks, and, you know, make your own shit up.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly. Or like Jimi Hendrix, you know, he took a lot of things and reinvented the sound. Just don't set the guitars on fire. You paid good money for that stuff. He doesn't give a crap about it.
No, I mean, yeah, there are these people that come along that just drastically, you know, take chances and mutate a whole genre into other stuff. You know, I mean, he's playing blues, Jimi Hendrix, but he cranked it up with tons of distortion and, you know, threw in some jazz, you know, 9 chords and some other shit in there.
And he had the reverb, and then he had, I think, and they said that some of the techniques he did, some of the licks, it's like, that was completely unexplained. And I'm sure somebody will come out with it, like an engineer or something. But then I read about Hendrix where it's like, he was actually a pretty good one, not, you know, super great or anything. He did that on a regular basis Armed Forces? I was Army, Navy. I can't remember.
He was
what
in
it
the
is.
Army. Yeah, I think
Army.
he was
Yeah,
in the
that
Army.
was it. And I was trying to think which one was it, but he was like, you're not just super great, but he was just good to pass the time. So,
yeah, he was played in bands, session jazz bands, and all kinds of shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was just doing a lot of that too. And of course, you talked about the Wilson sisters. You also opened up for him. How do you like that? So,
We all, it's, I don't like the word steal. We all get inspired by each other within the art form. I mean, I think I'm sure painters would say the same thing. Picasso and Van Gogh and all these people, if they were sitting around a table, which they were back in the day. I mean, that's just how these things work. So that was that. I'll never forget him saying that to me, no matter how young I was. He said that to me, and I think that also gave me a lot of self-esteem, because he believed that I could experiment and that I was a good enough to do that, and so it really did all start with him. And it was pretty devastating when he passed away.
Oh my gosh. I think it was where some people were looking to go see Ozzy Osbourne, check out Randy Rhoads. And I think it was up by where I lived in Chicago when news broke that Randy Rhoads died in a crash. And everybody's like, oh my gosh, they had mornings like they're debating whether to get rid of the Ozzy tickets or just go anyway and end up seeing like another guitar player in his place, which is pretty creepy too. My goodness, maybe think it's
Yeah,
Stevie Ray Vaughan
I
because
think
when
it
I
was
went right,
Randy.
yeah, so it's like I was planning on seeing him, and all of a sudden, it's like he got news that he died in a plane crash in Alpine Valley. So like,
Yeah, it was my mom called me at I was in high school, and she called the school office, and I remember I got a note to come to the school office and call my mom, and she told me, and yeah, of course I cried. I was very upset. I had seen him one previous time in between two Aussie tours. He came home and he went back to teaching his students,
How you
which was quite,
like that?
very dedicated. And so I saw him that last time, and he was so complimentary to me. I was older by then. I was 15, actually. That's when I saw him the last time. And so that was shocking, to deal with a death. And also, I don't think any I don't even know if it, like my grandparents had died or anything. Like it was really like
Just sudden.
and he meant so much to me psychologically too, just with the self-esteem and all of that. So that was rough. But time went on. I joined Precious Metal in high school when I was a senior. I stayed in touch with Randy's family, especially his mother, because she was still teaching at the school, and my parents still lived in the same house. So I would drop by, and Precious Metal ended up getting a record deal and, doing some stuff. And I kind of liken that band, it's an all-girl band. I liken it to my college time, because I did drop out of UCLA, and I decided, okay, I'm just, musician. And so I feel like being in that band was like going to college.
Or
And
School of Rock, as they call it too, so
there was a lot of very good lessons that I learned in that band about the business, mostly record deals, the business of record deals, management, agencies, and just what a band is like, and the inner workings, the inner dysfunction of being a band,
Function and dysfunction, isn't that common these days?
I mean, I had been in like neighborhood bands and other bands with guys and stuff, and they either hated me because I was better than them, or they wanted to date me, which I wasn't interested in. So when I saw the ad for an all-girl band, I was like, okay, this is my ticket. This all equal playing field, right? Level playing field. And I did like that camaraderie, that female energy, and everybody in the band was very strong-minded, and we were going to be playing on our tracks, and no one was going to take the guitar out of our hands, and all of those things. And we made a statement for quite a while. At the time, it was the 80s. It was very macho, 80s hair metal, and there were just a few of us. I mean, the Bangles and the Go-Go's had been around already, but we were doing like rock, like hard rock shit, and there was really only us and Vixen. Girls' school.
And also the Runaways.
The Runaways had come and gone. They were in the 70s. So Joan Jett was out there, and Lita Ford was just starting up. I'd heard about the Runaways, but they weren't as big. They didn't last that long. They had their time period in the 70s. And precious metal was 1984 to like 1990. So
Yes,
that
okay.
was right at the height of the Sunset Strip, the metal bands, the pop metal, hair metal. We were like hanging out with, Guns N' Roses and writing songs with Poison guys, and it was that whole thing. And I think, we proved ourselves pretty much by mid 80s that, okay, yeah, these girls can really play. If you came to a precious metal show, you could see we're playing.
I think I've heard of you guys for quite some time. I'll look that up. And you also got selected by Lindsey Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac on a special project. We'll talk about that along with the other works with Janet Robin of the String Revolution. But first, listen to The Mike Wagner Show at themikewagnershow.com, powered by Sonic Web Studios. Visit online at sonicwebstudios.com for all your needs. Look at a professional website without breaking your budget. Sonic Web Studios is the answer. Sonic Web Studios offers fast, affordable custom web designs that blow the competition away. Call today, 1-800-303-3960. That's 1-800-303-3960. Or email to support@sonicwebstudios.com. Mention the Mike Wagner Show. Get 20% off your first project. Sonic Web Studios. Take your image to the next level. Also, time to give official shout-out to our official sponsor of the Mike Wagner Show, international warring author Mian Molson Zia. If you love fast-paced mysteries, you'll love Missing by Mian Molson Zia, available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. Missing is fast-paced and intriguing with an unforgettable twist. It takes place in four countries, two strangers, one target, where truth is illusion and those who love beauty first go missing. It's available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. Missing by Mian Molson Zia has gotten great reviews in Evil 11 and Joyce by Howard celebrities, including Joanna Cassidy, Forge Riley, and Manilis. So grab your copy today for Goes Missing by Mian Molson Zia, available on Amazon. Also, check out The Mike Wagner Show at themikewagnershow.com and our 40 podcast platforms. Heard in 100 countries, including Facebook, SoundCloud, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, also Anchor FM, Odyssey, BitChute, Rumble, YouTube. Make sure you subscribe. Also on Podbean, Pandora, and more. Follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and more. Take us with you on any mobile device. And for great gift ideas, go to Amazon.com. Check out The Mike Wagner Show podcast. T-shirts, pop sockets, throw pillows, tote bags, hoodies. Makes great gifts 24/7. Go to Amazon.com. Check out The Mike Wagner Show podcast. And for more great gift ideas, go to Amazon.com/MianMolsonZia for great books like Missing, Once, and Wrinkles. Also T-shirts, pop sockets, hoodies, phone cases, and more. Amazon.com/MianMolsonZia. Check it out today and support The Mike Wagner Show on Anchor FM, PayPal, and TheMikeWagnerShow.com. We're here with the amazing, multi-talented Janet Robin of the String Revolution here on The Mike Wagner Show. And before we talk about that with Folsom Prison Blues, you got to... You got selected by Lindsey Buckingham of Fleetwood Mac, and it was Out of the Cradle in 92. So you went from Precious Metal to Out of the Cradle in 92. And how'd you first get involved with Lindsey Buckingham?
Well, it was the end of Precious Metal's time, around 1991. And we, grunge came along, and that was in a hair metal, and we all kind of went our separate ways. And I started a band with the singer from Precious Metal, and I was trying to decide what to do and experimenting with other music. And I actually got a call from somebody in LA at that time that was sort of like an agent who was responsible for putting musicians in people's bands.
Oh, okay.
The reason she had heard about me is because somebody was working for her that had worked at the label that Precious Metal was signed at back in the day. So he had referred me to her because Lindsey was putting together his first solo band. Like, he had solo records out, you know, but he'd never toured on them. This was the first time he was going to actually tour on his new release, which was Out of the Cradle. And he wanted to put together a special like guitar army. And he wanted it to consist of two guys and two women. And the reason is he wanted the vocals. There were a lot of also sort of vocals, female vocals on his new solo record, as well as some of the other Fleetwood Mac songs that he wanted to do in his live show. So he thought, well, I'll kill two birds with one stone. Can I find women who play guitar well? And there were a few of us around. I heard that Lita Ford, in fact, got a call, but I don't know if she ended up going to the audition. but I think Meredith Brooks, I don't think she went to the audition either, but I ended up playing with Meredith later when we talk about this. So I got a call and I was like, oh, Lindsey Buckingham, man, that guy is great. I was a fan. I didn't know that much about him, like personally. I just obviously was a Fleetwood Mac fan. And I was like, oh, this guy's really good. You know, he plays with no pick. You know, oh, that's intimidating.
I mean, they're so unconventional, no picks, and of course Mick Fleetwood, you would play drums on his body and everything,
Yeah.
and of course Stevie, and I'm sure Chrissie would probably play with a couple of fingers, John, Stan, whatever. It's like they're just unconventional
Oh,
though, so.
very, very. And they're very experimental. And Lindsay was very experimental in his recording processes, too. But yeah, I got the call to audition, and it was the longest audition of my life.
Really?
I had no preconceptions or pre anything about going. They're just like, bring your guitar and show up at this rehearsal place. And basically, everybody was just sitting around some of the other guys who had already gotten the gig. Lindsay showed me a few parts on guitar, and then we would sit around talking, you know, smoking some weed. And I was okay. I'm like, all right. And then, you know, he'd give me a vocal part to sing, and I would do that. And then, like, 2 hours would go by again, you know, and I'm like, this is weird, you know. So, like, about 4 or 5 hours later, I left the audition, basically not knowing what the hell just happened. You know, it was like, did I get that gig? What was that anyway? You know, I had no idea until 2 weeks later, I got a call. And yeah, he in fact wanted to hire me, and we had to start rehearsals like the next day because in a week we were going to be on the Leno Tonight Show.
Oh, wow, amazing.
So it was like boom, 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 boom. And he ended up hiring two guys, two women. The other girl was Lisa Carbet, who a long time ago was in the very first incarnation of Vixen. And she mostly plays bass now, but she can play, you know, great guitar, acoustic and electric. So it was us two and these two other guys, and you know, two percussion players, a drummer, a keyboard player, bass, and him. It was a 10-piece band.
Oh my goodness, wow.
And our task was to play almost every song on that record like the record, like
Huh.
all the parts, and then throw in some popular Fleetwood Mac songs, which of course had to be stellar. And you know, so like I said, Precious Metal was like going to college. Well, Lindsey Buckingham was like graduate school.
That's a good way to look at it. It's like,
You
you know, go
know.
to grad school and then you also went on to bigger and better things and you ended up having a solo release, Open the Door, and you also opened her, as I mentioned, Colin Hay and a lot more. It's like, you know, it's like having your first job or like your first business all of a sudden, so.
Yeah, or like, you know, trying to write that, you know, get my doctorate, you know. During the time with Lindsay, it was about 3 years on and off touring, and amazing education for me in a pro, like, not that Precious Metal wasn't pro, but this was at another level. And I was a hired gun. That's a different thing, you know, working for somebody,
Right,
and he's
yes.
a perfectionist. And I mean, I always joke with him. I still talk with him. I always tell him he's the reason I'm on anxiety medication.
Well, of course, Lindsay's always looking for trouble too. I remember that hit, you know, two in the
Such
bows. Like, yeah, he's always in trouble.
amazing. Yeah, I know. But such amazing music and such a great player. And I, you know, so we kind of bonded, and I think during that time, you know, the band was doing so good, and he loved it. It was like a family. He had left Fleetwood Mac, and we did a couple of really great tours, one on our own and one opening for Tina Turner.
Oh my goodness.
And
Wow.
that was another education, like
Wow.
watching her from the side of the stage for 6 weeks. I was like, is this really happening? You know, to be in that kind of, you know, realm of these pros and these amazing people, just I was really trying to be a sponge and take it all in. And all along, Lindsay was sort of pulling me aside, wanting to do some writing, and encouraging me towards the end of his project with us to do my own stuff.
Nice,
He was the
nice.
one, you know, he was like, you should write on your own. Get out there and do your own shit. And so that happened, and that led to me starting to release my own stuff, and I got inspired by a woman named Ani DeFranco.
I remember that, yes.
who was a DIY person, and I'd never heard of that in my life. I was like, what the fuck does that mean? You know, am I allowed to say that word on your show?
That's okay. I've heard worse, believe me. It's just
Well, she was a badass because I had never heard of anybody booking her own tours and selling her CDs like after the show. I
She
seen
does it
t-shirts.
herself. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, I've
Come
seen
to think of it,
t-shirts.
I remember now. Yes.
Yeah, she was like kind of the first one, besides maybe Michelle Schacht, who I also did some work with. But there weren't a lot of people that were like out there doing it on their own. And I was really inspired by that. So I just started, you know, I found a way to record, and then I found companies that would press your CDs. And, you know, I did all that. And I was calling up. This is like very pre-internet, you know. I was like calling on the phone, you know, not a cell phone, a regular phone, you know.
It's like a landline.
Right.
You got your old time computer, like a Apple, like a Lisa
Yes, a
or a
very
Commodore.
small
And of course,
Apple.
you got the fax machine was the big
Right.
thing back then. You had a pager, and of course,
Right.
you had a co and you had your coffee pot, or you went out and got expensive bottled waters to treat. Otherwise, just.
Exactly. And you know, your promo package, you had to send in a promo package with a folder and your photo and a CD inside, you know. And I was calling like coffee houses and venues, and you know, so I got into that whole world, and I did that for a very, very long time. And that led to a lot of other things. I toured all over the States, but that also led to a lot of touring in Europe much later in my
Oh,
career.
wow.
And in between, I started accepting hired gun gigs. You know, Meredith Brooks, I asked for you know, some touring with her and Michelle Schacht and Air Supply and you know, other people. While I was still booking my own shows, playing on the road, I was kind of a road warrior, and I was doing a lot in Europe. I mean, Europe was very good to me, I must say. You know, they treated me great. I got, I think, the most pressed for my solo career in Europe than I did here.
Wow, something you talked about Europe and people hitting all these countries and everything. What was your most favorite country in Europe?
I get asked that a lot, and you know, I gotta say, well, I love Europe just in general, but I love Prague
Nice.
in the Czech Republic, you know, former Czechoslovakia. I think it's one of the most amazing romantic, gothic, you know, European cities that still looks like how it was, you know, when it was founded. Because in World War II, World War I, it wasn't bombed.
Oh my goodness,
So
that's a miracle.
everything's intact, all those cobblestone streets, all those gothic churches. And I think when I started touring there, my career started taking off a lot more. I ended up getting a record deal with a German label. Then I ended up touring more in Germany and then France. And you know, it just spread, and it was great. And so during that time was when I reached out to John Carter Cash, and I started wanting to work with other producers rather than like producing myself.
Right, yeah, and of course, I led you to Folsom Prison Blues, the String Revolution, and more on that. And what's it like with John Carter Cash and Folsom Prison Blues? We'll find out with Janet Robin and the String Revolution. You listen to the Mike Wagner Show at themikewagnershow.com, powered by Sonic Web Studios, and brought to you by official sponsor of the Mike Wagner Show, international warring author Mia Molson-Zia. We'll be back with the multi-talented Janet Robin of the String Revolution after this timeout. We're back in the multi-talented Janet Robin of the String Revolution, the Mike Wagner Show, and we'll be playing Folsom Prison Blues at the end of the audio interview. And more on John Carter Cash. You got the call, and you kind of got the ball rolling with String Revolution and more.
Yeah, you know, I actually reached out to him, to John Carter Cash, because I had seen a video of him talking about growing up listening to like Judas Priest and Iron Maiden, and
Do you think his dad would have approved, and maybe Drew,
right,
would she
you know,
approve more?
and that he was running his dad's recording studio called Cash Cabin, and he was working with a lot of singer-songwriters. And I was like, man, this guy sounds like right up my alley, because I have metal hard rock background too, and I'm doing sort of more, you know, bluesy rock now. And I was like, I want to work with him. So I literally sent him a message through MySpace.
I
And
remember MySpace.
never
Yes.
MySpace. And I actually sent it to Cash Cabin Studios. And I was like thinking, you know, some like reception person is going to get back to me. But, you know, it was during Christmas. So, like the beginning of the year, he finally got back to me himself. Actually, he sent me an email because I put my email in there. And he said, oh, I'd love to work with you. I like your history, your background, and, you know, let's do it. And so, yeah, you know, that started the first record, which was called Everything Has Changed. And it was just a great, you know, partnership with him. And it turns out that once I went there to work with him, we started talking about our metal days. And he's like, what band? You were in an all-girl band? I said, yeah, Precious Metal. And he's like, I saw you guys at the Whiskey, you know? Yeah, when I used to hang out at Sunset Boulevard, you know? He's like, I was a fan of you guys. And I was like, oh my God, you know, synchronicity, right?
Yes, indeed. It's like, you know, I remember seeing you guys. I know how that goes.
And that's just funny, you know, that just made me really feel like, oh, I'm in the right place at the right time. And I ended up doing another record with him. We stayed in contact. And during that interim, I started the String Revolution, which is an all instrumental guitar band. And it's really because I was like, frankly, I was having trouble with my voice. I think years of not singing properly. And I had an injury. I had surgery twice on one of my vocal cords. And I was just starting to get really like worried, you know, and it was always so hard to do these tours. They were so long, so much singing and, you know, 6 days a week, 2 hour shows. And you can hear now, you know, I'm a little scratchy. So I was like,
Right, yeah. And of
I
course,
gotta
you know, the
find
conditions, all that stuff. I know
all of
how it
that
goes.
stuff, you know, and I enjoyed singing, but I'm a guitar player. I mean, I sing okay, you know, and I love writing songs with lyrics, and I love songs and all that. But my strong point is playing guitar. So I was like, you know, I'm gonna bring it back and start another project that really showcases guitar playing and focuses on the guitar, and so that I don't have to keep, you know, worrying.
Well, speaking of guitar, I happen to see one right in front. Maybe you can just pick it up and play a little bit. So
There
it's just like, you know,
is one here.
go ahead, have right at it here. So
Yeah.
Janet Robin, the String Revolution here on the Mike Wagner Show.
Well, what should I play?
I don't care. It's up to you.
I'll do a little, a quick little, a little instrumental.
All right, go for it.
Just a little different tune.
Nice, good job. Woo, that was amazing. Wow.
So yeah, you know, I wanted to bring it back also to the acoustic guitar. And I wanted to start a band where the focus was on the guitar, and what could we do with the guitar instrumentally that was different? Could we do more percussive things? Could we bang on it like a drum? Could we use other kinds of guitars like a baritone or, you know, other string kind of instruments? And I met these guys. Actually, I purposely put out an ad in Craigslist because I wanted to meet new musicians that I never played with, that I didn't know, just, you know, totally new. And the String Revolution was born. And that was about 8 years ago. And we went through one different incarnation. We're now a trio. We started out as a four piece. And we have been releasing some covers along the way. as well as originals. And the last cover we released was Folsom Prison Blues, because I thought, you know, we should do something unique with our next cover. Let's, you know, let's do a Cash song. First of all, you know, Johnny Cash is just the epitome of cool.
Right, yes. I remember listening to Johnny Cash, yeah.
You know.
Outlaw Country, I grew up on that. My dad played
you know,
Cash a lot.
To me, he's like a rocker. To me, he's like a rocker. You know, I know his music was not rock and roll, but I know inside he's like a rocker, you know? And so I thought Folsom was a great song for the band to do. It had a great groove, you know, especially for my kind of percussive playing. And I thought, okay, well, if we're going to do a Cash song, I'm going to ask John Carter, first of all, can we do it? And second of all, will you produce it? And can we record at your dad's studio? And we sent him the demo and he said, yes, let's do it. I love this. This is a great idea. I think he was hesitant to begin with, because a lot of people, you know, re-record his dad's songs and all that. But this was unique because it was no vocals.
Yes. I think I remember something about that. It's like you hear everybody trying to duplicate Johnny, but I listened to yours actually, and I was like, there was something very special about it.
Well, there's no vocals. It's all done by guitar. And of course, when you do a cover, I'm always of the thought of, like Randy Rhoads would say, you know, don't do it exactly like the cover. What's the point of that? Because you're never going to sound exactly like that. You must put your own twist on it and change it up and, you know, surprise people. And so that's what we did. And at the same time, we decided we should have a special guest, because we had done that the year before with Crazy Train. We did a version of Crazy Train with Steve Stevens from Billy Idol's band.
Yeah, Steve Stevens. I remember him.
Love him. You know, great guy. And he did a fantastic job on that song. Just killer flamenco play. People don't know that about him, but he's a flamenco player.
Oh my
but
gosh,
anyway,
I love that one. Yes.
We were in Nashville, and I was like, I don't know who we're going to find this last minute. I mean, we're literally going to record the next day. And I was thinking, man, Tommy Emmanuel lives in Nashville, but of course he's never home. You know, he's always on the road. How could he possibly be home tomorrow? But, you know, our management reached out to his management, and I had worked with Tommy once before when I was touring in Europe as a solo artist. I opened for him once.
Nice.
You know, I don't know if he was going to remember that or not, but I think he did. And he's like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then he's like, so it's Cash Cabin. I've never been there. You know, I think he was more intrigued about going to Cash Cabin and meeting John Carter Cash. He's like, who's the String Revolution? But then when he got there, I think he really, really liked the track. And he literally was there 2 hours maximum, put down some amazing, like, guitar tracks. Oh, my God. We were all in the control room, like, you know, like, you know, it was so good, like, everything he played. And then he left. He was like a phantom, you know. And so we ended up, you know, doing some edits, and Folsom Prison Blues was born. It was submitted to the Recording Academy, and we ended up with a nomination, which was already shocking, you know. And then we ended up with the win for Best Arrangement for the Grammy, Best Arrangement Instrumental.
Yes, indeed. And a big congratulations on that one. That was amazing.
Well, thank you. And Tommy deserves it, obviously. He had been nominated twice before. I know it's with our band, but it's still, he put his stamp is all over that track. He's playing the main melody. He shares some parts with Robert from the String Revolution. I'm doing a lot of the rhythms. Marcus is doing some color parts. But, you know, I'm so happy for Tommy, too, because, like I said, he hadn't won a Grammy yet. He'd been nominated. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. You know,
and that was all for him. That's so amazing. Where can we find Folsom Prison Blues and all your works at, Janet?
Well, of course, on all your streaming platforms, Spotify, you know, YouTube. The video is pretty cool on YouTube because it's sort of like a documentary-ish. You know, you kind of see the innards of Cash Cabin, which is really cool. And you see us working on the song. And that was shot, you know, in real time on an iPhone.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah,
Everybody's
my
doing an iPhone these days.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to start doing that from now on. I got to use this phone here. So,
I mean, we did some editing tricks on it and whatnot, but you know, it was a friend of mine that lived in Nashville, and I was like, I don't have time to do any content. And, you know, would you mind coming down? And so she's shooting, and I didn't know it was going to be a video. You're like, we're going to turn out to be the video for the song, but it was. So you can see it on YouTube, Spotify, Pandora, you know, Deezer, everything. It's everywhere. And, yeah, we appreciate you playing it. I appreciate you having me on your show, of course, and spreading the gospel of guitar.
Yeah, yes, the gospel indeed. So
you know, that's my mission in life, is to spread the gospel of guitar. And I do appreciate you having me on the show.
Oh, that's a great thing.
I hope I gave your listeners some interesting stories.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I love hearing stories. I love to have you back on. We're here with Janet Robin, The String Revolution, featuring Folsom Prison Blues on The Mike Wagner Show. Once again, we'll be playing that song at the end of the audio interview, so we encourage everybody to do that. And just a few more things, Janet. We'd love to have you back on. What else can we expect from you, The String Revolution, and everything in 2024 and beyond?
Well, you know, the Grammy did open up some doors. At least more people know of our name now, and which is good. We did get a new agency, which is also great, because we're starting to get booked up, and we've got some shows coming up starting in like July, sporadic ones, and then more regular ones in November, hitting some East Coast stuff, Pittsburgh and that area. And then we will be touring, opening for Tommy in December.
Nice, nice.
That'll be on the Southeast area. We're doing about 8 or 9 shows. We're also going to go to Europe. We have one gig so far, but we'll hopefully book some more. It's in Vienna at a concert house, because one of the members of the String Revolution is Austrian. So
nice.
He is now a big star in Austria, which is great. So we're looking forward to touring. And in the meantime, we're playing some closer, you know, regional local gigs, and we are working on new material. We have several originals. We're really excited about another cover that I can't tell you about, but we're working on that as well. And we have been approached by the video game music community. You know, there's a whole community
video games. Oh my gosh, that's like an 80s thing. It's kind of like, you know, just making a comeback. And I'm thinking video games, like with what was it, Discord? And
Discord,
yes.
Mm-hmm. It is huge. And we just got back from San Francisco performing on the Game Audio Network Awards. So,
oh my goodness, wow.
It was for video game music awards, kind of thing like that. And what an interesting world that is. And the music is, this isn't like, you know, nothing wrong with Super Mario's theme, but I'm just saying, this is like orchestrated, you know, like with the London Symphony. And I mean, these are huge productions, soundtracks. There's even a Grammy category now, best video game soundtrack.
I heard something about that. And I think the Grammy Academy now doing, like, you know, video game this, game that, and everything. And I think, you know, even up for awards, like, you know, video game voiceover, video game story. And
yes,
it's like, you know, it's taking a whole new level right there. So
it was so fascinating to be there. I learned a lot. And so we would like to get, you know, involved more in that. We are starting to work on a project for one of the companies. And so, you know, a lot of different things. We, you know, like to get into film composition, you know, video game music composition. We've got our originals. We're going to continue touring. I have a side project I was telling you about, a blues recording project I'm working on to kind of educate people about the history of blues guitar by a white lady.
Mm-hmm.
But
nothing
whatever.
Wrong with that. So
it's all good. And that's it. You know, I teach as well. I have several students I'm keeping loyal to, just like my teacher was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing some sessions here and there. And that's my life. You know, I'm very grateful.
Oh, my gosh, that's so amazing. You know how to stay busy, Jeff. This is great. And, of course, you know, who's your biggest influence in your career? I mean, you mentioned, you know, several. You want to pick one? That's great. I mean, who is like the biggest of all?
People have asked me that, and it's very hard to say. It's like people saying, "Well, who's your favorite child?" I mean, it's really hard because there are people who came into my life or inspired me for different reasons. So Randy Rose, what I would have to say was my first inspiration to believe in myself, that I could really play guitar. And then somebody like Nancy Wilson, seeing a woman up there rocking out with the guys, that was another one. And then just plain old guitar playing, Jimmy Page.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I just grew up with my brother blasting Zeppelin records, in his room while the pot smoke was coming out of underneath the door, coming out. So, Jimmy Page, and Hendrix, I mean, amazing players. So I can't just say one person. And then, of course, Lindsey came along at a certain time in my life when I really needed to be re-exposed to the acoustic guitar, which then, of course, also, led me eventually to getting back to it with the string revolution. So, Lindsey has and is still continuing to be a mentor. I played him Folsom, when we had lunch, and
Oh my gosh,
I
yeah.
just think the world of him. And so I cannot say one, and it's almost like, what's your favorite guitar? Same thing. Can't say one, but I will tell you the ones that I mostly play. My Taylor Dan Curry signature model, which they don't make anymore. It's called the DCSM. I have three of those, and that's my main acoustic. And my main electric that my go-to is my 52 reissue Tele Butterscotch.
Nice. We'll
But
keep
I
those
still
in
have my 1978 Les Paul custom that I used in my lessons with Randy, and
Wow,
I
amazing.
still have that one, but I don't take it out on the road, or I don't use
Just keep that with an honor of less. It's like you never know. It could be worth millions one day. You never
it.
know.
Well,
So.
I'm never selling it, and it's still an amazing guitar. I mean, it's holds its value, of course, and its playing value as well. But yeah, so I hope I somehow gave you an answer to
Oh
my
yeah, I think you
pleading.
did great on that one. It's one of the best answers that anyone has given, coming from you. That's great. And lastly, what's the best advice you can give to anybody at this point?
Don't quit. Don't quit, whatever it is that you want to do in your life. If you have a passion and you really want to do it and get as good as you can at it, it's very simple. Do not quit. Keep doing it. And I the only reason I can tell you that is because my dad, who passed away a couple of years ago, my whole life, of course I had ups and downs. It's not the easiest career choice.
Right. Yeah. I mean, nothing's ever easy. It's like if it was
Of
easy, it's
course.
like, everybody would do it. It's like, what's a challenge, really?
Of course. But there were a lot of reasons why it wasn't easy. But you're right, in general, nothing is easy in general. And then picking, the music business, being a woman guitarist. I mean, there's so many things. And I just kept hearing him, don't give up. Just keep working. Just and so he would always liken our family members to being, the turtle and the rabbit story,
Oh yeah, I've heard that a number of times, yes.
So he's like, we're not like the rabbit. He's like, we're like the turtle. We do it the right way, but we do it slowly, and we get to the finish line, And I was like, oh my God, you fucking cursed me. So look, I'm 57 and I won a Grammy. That's fine. I didn't need to win it at 25. It's
Right.
okay at
You know
57.
something too? I think you hit upon a great point. I was talking to somebody on my show as well too, and we follow the same career path, getting the back door and broadcasting, taking our time and building up, and unlike you see these people, they get 1 million hits on Instagram, and all of a sudden, fall off the face of the earth, never heard from again. And of course, they say, how come you'll get so little views? It's like, we like it to take their time. And then, I've had a couple of words like, they still listened. I still get likes and still builds. And it was from like,
Exactly.
oh God, 4 or 5 years ago.
But
And I'm
that's
still getting
because
love out of it.
you like what you do. You like what you do. So you have to want it. And then, of course, you have to keep working hard at it. Just because you win a Grammy doesn't mean like, oh, yeah, the phone's ringing off the hook. No, we got you. few opportunities. It doesn't pay all the bills. You got to keep, okay, we're back on the horse. Let's work again. You must work hard and you must never give up.
And I think that's a great point as well, too. We're here with Janet Robin, the String Revolution with Folsom Prison Blues here on the Mike Wagner Show. Janet, very big thank you for your time. You've been absolutely fantastic. Learned a lot. Looking forward to having you again soon. Keep us up to date. Keep in touch. We'd love to have you back and keep us up to date with your latest project. And once
thank
again,
you so
what's
much.
Your website? How do people contact you? What can people purchase or check out
Yeah,
your website?
JanetRobin.com or, you know, come check us out at thestringrevolution.com. And we're also under, you know, Janet Robin Music on Instagram and The String Revolution on Instagram and Facebook. It's all under those names. Just find me, send me messages, whatever. I answer everything. Unless it's really weird. Don't send me any weird shit. Trust me.
We'll make sure the guitar gods, you know, kick that out. So, and focus on that. We'll make sure. All right, Janet, very big thank you for your time. You've been absolutely fantastic. Looking forward to having you soon. Keep us up to date. Keep in touch. We'd love to have you back. Wish you all best. And Janet, you definitely have a great future ahead of you.
Thank you, Mike.